Hey folks, welcome back to Goldberg Who's Next, the Goldberg Podcast. I'm Stephen Graham, and joined as promised with Johnny P. How are you doing?
Yay! I'm sorry, I almost played the Goldberg music over it by accident. It would have been perfect. If by perfect, I mean funny to me and annoying to everyone else. Hi, I'm here.
You're here, you're focused.
It would be like a swerve that, like, in very wrestling, it's like, I play the music and then I'm like, I'm here, it's Johnny P, and you're like, you're not Goldberg, dude. And then we watch a real Goldberg match, and it's like, oh, he's here! You know, you imagine Bobby Heenan. It's very meta, because this has happened 23 years ago, and I'm not on the show, and I'm just a dude from the internet, but, you know.
And if it was TNA, we'd be asking, what is he doing here in the Impact Zone?
Right.
And not say who it is. And no one would know. That's the way they did
it. Well, I mean, that's a genuine concern, though. Like, why is he here? Legally speaking, this person that you don't know. Because if I jumped the rail, the question would be, why is he here?
That's a great question.
Most people are listening to this podcast saying, why is he here? So
Johnny's the best. That's why Johnny's here.
Thanks, buddy.
So here this week, we're talking about Goldberg's first pay-per-view match against Steve Mongo McMichael. It's a great nickname. Yeah. What are your thoughts on Mongo? Because he seems to be a polarizing individual.
I can't say I've gone back and watched a lot of Mongo in my
me neither.
In my I don't know what I was gonna say, my older age? I don't know, I'm not even 40 yet. I haven't watched a lot of Mongo since literally WCW Fold. I have seen him in segments because I've gone back and watched a lot of like Flair promos and random Monday night stuff and NWO stuff. Like I've seen his involvement. He's never been very good. For my tastes.
But he was passable, and he really tried.
He did, and he was passable. And I weirdly liked him as an announcer, as a personality, not as an announcer, not as somebody who literally did commentary. So I'll split hairs and say I liked him as an announcer. I hated his commentary. But hey, Dusty Rhodes is amazing, and Dusty Rhodes was he's known for commentary that is notable for being ridiculous, not for being good as commentary. So,
wow. How you define what is good.
Exactly. It's art. It's all very what do you see in the picture? And not even art. It's like, what color is this dress? It's also that. So
yeah. And Mongo, he had a kind of short career, but do you know much about his football career?
Yeah, it was on the 1986 World Championship Chicago Bears team,
and he was a really good player, right?
He was notable enough that I believe he's in that team's Hall of Fame, and maybe, but I'm not positive, is in the NFL Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
It's like so American football, for those who don't know, it's like, there's 11 or 12 guys on the field, and so people tend to, people like action, people like the people who make moves, so the unsung heroes are guys on either the offensive or defensive lines, and he was, I believe, one of those people. So it's not something where it's he's a famous running back. He ran and got touchdowns. He wasn't a wide receiver. He wasn't a quarterback who threw the touchdowns. And he wasn't a defensive back who would intercept things or knock people out with a big shot that would be a highlight reel thing.
Yeah, but he's one of the most successful football players to ever go into wrestling.
I mean, maybe I now Wahoo McDaniel. Yeah, I was gonna say Ernie Ladd, Wahoo McDaniel. There's a few people from the 50s and 60s when the NFL pretty much was a part time job that paid a part time job. Yeah. But yes, for modern day, guys who won championships, host territory days too. Anything from 80 on, he's probably the most notable. Yeah, I'd have to. Other than your one shots where it's LT had a passable match.
Yeah.
After leaving the league for drug issues kind of a thing.
And it's so funny because he clearly wanted to do it because he did that WrestleMania.
Yes.
With LT, he signed with WCW and did 3-4 years.
I think wrestling got too big. He was kind of a victim of wrestling success, if you think about it. Because, if wrestling is still what it was in, the first half of 95, or, going back to, 94, 93, 92, he totally has a job in wrestling that's somewhat prominent.
He might have became world champion.
I mean, you could project it out to that, sure. Like, I'm leery to do such things, but it's not insane to think about.
It's my missed opportunity, is the Mongo title reign.
Yeah, I don't know, man. This is where our tastes sort of split, and I'm like, I don't want to live on that timeline.
I like dudes that look like they're in a fight. And Mongo looked like he was in a wrestling match. He always looked like he was kind of in a fight, maybe.
Okay, that's a fair clarification, because I was going to say, like, he looked pretty effing goofy.
He did.
Like, he wasn't exactly where, like, he wasn't dressed for, like, a bunkhouse stampede, like, bunkhouse brawl kind of match, you know?
He was never doing, like, you know, intricate mat work. He was just kind of throwing punches and knees.
Why were his tights the way they were? I never quite understood the... It felt like they were too big at the top. It was a weird thing.
I thought they were, like... football pants, but like made into tights. Isn't that what? If you took away all the other equipment,
they would still go over the kneecap, though.
That's true. So then I don't know.
Yeah, and they would also have like a design on the sides. They'd have stripes or something, usually, or at least in that era they would. Wow. You might be right about like the original idea that probably got abandoned pretty quickly.
Yeah, because I think he had stripes on the side when he started.
Yeah. So you're probably onto something, and then they were just like, this doesn't quite work, and he's now a wrestler. Like, I think it's like once you use up the capital of former Chicago Bear, you go to, like, guy in wrestling who is in Four Horsemen. You know what I mean? Like, the gimmicks become, not malleable, but, like, fluid.
Yeah. And then he became guy from the Four Horsemen when there is no Four Horsemen.
True.
Which is good. So, do you want to get to this match? Because it's a little bit longer than what we're used to on this podcast, so.
Yeah.
We'll have to get into that. Okay, so let's go to the match. Alright, and this is, this one's more notable because Goldberg kind of gets a pop here.
Okay.
That's fun.
So that means people, it's catching on. You know, you know, late September, so you got October, November. So we're literally just over 90 days with this.
Yeah. So he's starting to get over, and we'll really see it on the next episode.
And this is a hot crowd. This is a big crowd. You know, this is at the MCI. Well, I think it was the Verizon Center at the time. It's MCI. Or maybe I have it that backwards. But it's the newer arena in Washington, D.C. that year, I think, was brand new.
The home of the Washington Capitals.
Correct. Oh my God, Billy Kidman, young Billy Kidman, in front of the flock in the
Riggs and Lodi and Sick Boy.
What's crazy is this is already post Stevie Richards. Like Stevie Richards was in and out of WCW in about like 4 months,
if even that.
yeah, you're right, because he, you know what, he showed back up at the November to Remember in ECW. He super kicked Dreamer,
yeah.
And that was like the 27th of November. So it's a month.
He's got stripes on his tights.
Come
on.
Oh, hey.
And he's got his number? Those are
okay, yeah. So he literally says, his jacket literally says the Bears, which I had completely forgotten about. So yeah. So that shows how much I was paying attention to Mongo. He is giving the four fingers, though, so I'm glad that he remembered. He also thinks that four plus emotion means F you.
Yeah. But, like, the Horsemen are long gone by this point.
Yeah, oh, God, yeah.
All right.
I like that they started in the ramp.
Yeah, that's rare.
Because otherwise you have to, first of all, it makes Goldberg look like a badass because you know he's getting the babyface shine. But also you kind of have to do a quick finish or give Mongo like way more offense if it starts in the ring. Whereas you could have him do something nefarious here possibly. Jeez, you just herked him. Oh my God. That's what I do to my nephews, but they were like 6 or 7 at most. My God.
He's just picking him up and carry him to the ring like he's a toddler.
This is when tables were still unique to the mainstream wrestling because ECW had their first pay-per-view, in April of this year. So this is still a very novel, notable thing.
And it's Goldberg using a table, which is weird too.
Right. So you can tell he's not sure. Like, he's almost uncooperative, but not because he's a shitty person or bad at his profession. He just doesn't, know any better yet, I feel. I don't think he's been given proper instruction on how much to sell and how much to be a monster.
I don't think he would have come out. Eddie instruction, to be honest.
Did you notice that he didn't come out of there and spear him, which is like something he would normally do? He got whipped to the buckle. He came out of it and fed Mongo.
Well, it's time to have a real match. Like, this is what I think is what happened is they got Goldberg in. He looked really cool.
Yeah.
They spent a couple weeks with him trying to be a heel, and they realized that didn't work.
Because the face, the crowd determined.
It felt wrong, right? So then they decided that let's have a real feud and a real match and see what happens. So this is like the culmination of like trying to treat Goldberg as like a normal wrestler.
Yeah. Because he would have seen him twice already, because he came off the ropes and just gave him a forearm. God, you can break this down. It's so simplistic, but you could break this down like the freaking Zapruder film if you wanted to. Because there's just so many little things that I'm picking up here where I'm like, well, that's different, or that's before he knew, or that's before he was kind of trained to do X or Y kind of a thing.
Yeah, he's not full Goldberg yet.
No. And he's just kind of doing a head shake sell, which he would stick with, but his body would the motions would be different. He'd go to a knee or something. It seems like he's not sure what to register and what not to, which I actually see as some form of like, almost like a cognition from him. Like, he's getting hit and he's not experienced enough to go, that's something I should register or that's something I shouldn't.
That's awesome.
I love the tears because you can tell he wants to unleash as he puts the boots to him, and then he's pulling himself back at the last moment because he would get fired up in the moment.
Yeah, for sure. Well, look at that. His head's cut open already.
Yeah, this is something I'm not trying to be like old man yells at cloud. This is something that I wish they would allow more wrestlers to do, which is be in the moment within reason in modern day, where they're afraid to lose themselves for that moment because they're trying to remember all the memorized things and communicate a million things and where am I looking? What am I doing?
And I feel like that's the story of early Goldberg, is him trying to figure out when to really go for it.
Yeah, you can see his brain working to be a good employee here against his emotions and some of the things that I'm sure his trainers were a little different from the people who were agenting and kind of heading some of the creative things for him.
Yeah, sure. And it's pay-per-view. Like, you can't just, you know, have your first grudge match and have him just run through the guy. So
a weird, awkward leg lock, and then he just kind of comes out of it, and then they're just kind of knocks shoulder block-ish, pushes him down. But he has such a presence that it's easily forgivable the moment after, you know?
Well, it looks different, because it's like, he's oozing charisma, like, as they say. He's just got something special.
I do feel like in the moment, though, people aren't as nice, because we subconsciously or consciously know what's happening. So, like, I feel like in the moment, if you go back and read reviews or listen to, like, non-existent audio
sure
shows.
Shit on.
Oh, exactly. That's what I'm getting at. Because it's like, he seems very in the middle of, like, what to do. This is, like, a very major moment in his career that we're watching right now. First long-form live match.
And he's setting up a table.
Oh, yeah.
With great difficulty.
Now that's the story of wrestling.
That's true.
For like, what, 20 years, and then they started to get better at it?
Tables are very complicated to stand up.
Nobody knows to snap that piece.
Yeah,
not just about opening it. You gotta snap the thing that holds it, that locks it in place.
Yeah.
And Mongo's like not doing him any favors, necessarily. Because he's also in the infancy of his experiences in a lot of ways.
Yeah, for sure. Mongo's not like a...
This is insane, by the way, if he does this.
What, pick him up and drop him head first through a table?
Yes! Yes! Which is what I thought was going to happen. There was a moment where I'm like, did I forget history? Did this happen?
Well, Mongo would not have been safe.
Mongo would have been fired. Like, retroactively from the time, like, not the next day, but when Goldberg became a star and say, like, by April, they would have just, like, randomly sent the pink slip to Mongo's house.
You see that nice drop kick, though?
Yes, it was very pretty. Like, legitimately, I'm not being sarcastic. That was a nice dropkick.
It's weird that Goldberg used to do dropkicks like that,
though. Absolutely. Like, anything that's off of the beaten path of, like, the Goldberg formula now looks, like, radical today.
Exactly.
Just the pauses in between things are fascinating. At least they pre-cut that table. It was breaking before he hit it, so.
That's true. But it looked good. It was a good table spot.
Oh, God, and they used to have the wire stuff around the side. That's right. I forgot all this ECW that I watched for years and years, and I forgot about the like, metal wire strip around it. This is, like, where they show, like, I can't believe they haven't gone to the finish. Like, why is Mongo fighting him after going through that table?
Mongo's a tough guy, man.
Oh, jeez. Okay. He saved it by grabbing his back, but he just completely lost that man. He went to pick him up and slam him, for those wondering, and then Mongo, like...
The Mongo Spike, the Tombstone Pile Driver.
And right there was the jackhammer out of nowhere. No spear, just jackhammer. Yeah. 1, 2, 3, your winner, Goldberg.
It wasn't a consistent spear jackhammer yet at this point.
No, he kind of, like, goes right into it once he gets him up. How long is it? How long was that, I should say?
Well, the video file says 9 minutes, but it's probably, like, 6 or 7.
Yeah, because of introductions and everything. Dude, at that point, that was probably double what it should have been. But I get that the mindset at that time is pay-per-view matches just go long. I remember there being a talking point that he had to learn to work with the idea that he would be doing 25-minute matches as, like, a worker. After
bizarre.
Yeah, but the idea was he'll have to have something. Well, no, it makes sense, though. Especially back then, it's like, well, what does he do once he's not the Road Warrior? Because we can't have him, his gimmick being, I win and I roll over everybody. Forever. It turns out you can, by the way, but mostly it's one in a million. He just happened to be the one in a million.
Yeah. And it's so weird because, like, he hit a point, like, you see with, like, the DDP matches and stuff like that, where he could have really good longer matches. And then he goes to the WWE and they're like, yeah, you need to work 40 minutes with Triple H.
That was all about sabotage, I felt.
Yeah, yeah. And then he goes away for 10 years, and he comes back, and he has even shorter matches than he
did. Right, like, right. They're bangers, though. Like, I'll fight to the death for those matches with Lesnar are so cool to me.
Oh, man. Being live for Goldberg's return against Lesnar in Toronto was, like, one of the best wrestling experiences I've ever had.
I can imagine. I'm still in love with the Mania match. The Mania match they have is just, it's such a banger. It reminds me of, like, I miss the days where you'd get two guys that you didn't think you'd see collide, and it would be like, I know this might seem, like, really weird to a lot of modern fans, but, like, I think of, like, Kawada versus Gary Albright from the Dome. It's just like, well, what's going to happen here? Because these guys don't even fight the same way. And then they're just like, everything's a bomb. Everything is a bomb, and it's appropriate because it's going to be like a flash fire fight, you know?
Oh, yeah. So that was, what do you think of that match overall?
Well, that's fun. I don't know. I thought that was what we were doing. I thought that in isolation, in my home, watching old footage or the network or something, that I'd be like, this is fascinating for about 2 minutes, and then I'd kind of fast forward. Like, if it had been on a random pay-per-view, say 2 months ago, I probably wouldn't have really been that into it, because I wouldn't have had perspective of time to see, like, well, this, like, I don't have the post-knowledge, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, it's just like, well, this isn't going too well, but it's kind of interesting as, like, sort of neat and sort of a rough and tumble match and sort of a car crash at the same time. It's so much more interesting now than it probably was the night I watched it back in late 97.
And what if I told you that was Goldberg's 17th match of his life?
I don't think at that time I would have understood, like, the importance of that or, like, the relevance. I just would have had some very basic, like, that seems like really soon to be on a pay-per-view or something. I know from being, not only being analytical, like, within pro wrestling, but knowing wrestlers who were getting buzz in less than 50 matches, that they are very protected and that there's a lot of leaps, not just one big leap, but several mini leaps for them to be like, that's insane. It is really insane that he was in that position and that, like, based on that, it turned out really well.
Yeah. It's wild to think about what all had to go right and what all was going on, and think about, like, the state that Eric Bischoff was in at this point with the NWO and all the focus on that, for this to work out, like, it's just mind-boggling.
Yeah, I mean, this is the night. It's one of two or three things that people point to as, like, that could be the night that you go, like, well, it ended that night. Yep. I mean, this is the night that they fast count. Bret Hart fast counts Hogan. I think it's Bret Hart, but maybe it's not Bret Hart.
I think it's Nick Patrick.
Oh, that's right. And then Bret's like, this can't happen again, because, like, the screw job is
screwed again.
The screw job was only, like, 6 or 7 weeks before this.
Yeah.
And, yeah, the whole thing is insane, even 20-some years later, where I'm like, why did you do that like that? Yeah, this is the night of the big match that was built up from the start of their buzz, from the start of the NWO thing and the buzz there, to this is supposed to be the culmination, and it's really not. And then I guess there's a match, what, the night after, for free?
Yeah, that goes into a no contest.
So look, it's not the finger poke of doom, but in some ways, like, 98 is kind of a mess anyway, and this is the last... You know, this is the last gasps of 97, so. Yeah.
But then 98 was the year they made the most money.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, here's the funny thing. 98 is the year that both WCW and ECW made the most money. And I don't go back and watch a lot of 1998 ECW, no. And I don't go back and watch a lot of 1998 WCW, no. To be honest with you. So, like.
Or 98 WWF, for that matter.
Yeah, I mean, it really folds into, like, my anti-capitalist stance, I guess. yeah, I don't, like, look, here's what I'll say, in all seriousness, like, you know, pro or minus capitalism. I don't watch wrestling. This is an internet argument that pisses me off. I'll try to be brief. But I don't give a shit how much money the company makes. I mean, that's great. Like, if you think you're winning an argument by saying, well, it drew money, like, that's cool. Also, like, I don't give a shit. I don't go, like, I really did not enjoy myself. And then Steven goes, yes, John, but it made them money. And I go, oh, well, if they're wealthier, then it was enjoyable. It just doesn't work that way. Like, I don't give a shit that these companies, which, by the way, are all out of business, by the way.
If you think about it for 1 second, like, look at the highest grossing movies and look at, like, the best movies.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and also, it doesn't work, at least with movies, it's word of mouth.
Yeah.
You're arguing economics based on, I bought a show sight unseen, which is how wrestling works. I bought a show sight unseen, but what happened on that show was so egregious to so many fans that it began the drop-off. It began the whisper campaign, which became the shouting campaign online. And then trickle down to your average, I just watch TV on Monday nights and I've never heard of the internet because it's early 1998. It slowly chipped away at that, you know?
Well, there's, I forget who said it, but like, they said that like wrestling business is like 8 months behind the product.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Especially then. It's probably more instantaneous now, but it's still not real time. But anyway, guys, this is to bring this around for us, Steven. This is the world Bill Goldberg is born into. And I do think it affects his career because there are some moments in 98 that are famous, that are him from a company that is starting to flounder, but is still doing some things right. So you're eventually going to see his win over Raven in April. You're eventually going to see him and Hogan from the Georgia Dome. And it's amazing. But he is born into a world where his, what, 16th, 17th match, you said?
Yeah.
Is in many ways, for a lot of people, the beginning of the end. If you're a canary in the coal mine, this would be that moment. Because I do think finger poke of doom is so much more obvious, and they're already faltering, so.
I think Goldberg losing to Nash was worse than the finger poke.
Fair. I mean, they're what, within a week or two?
That's true, too. You know? But it was like a 1-2 punch. It
right.
Like
well, finger poke, the reason people point to it is because of also Foley's on the other channel on a taped episode of, and they're literally mocking it, and people are going, oh, I didn't know that was then. That was happening tonight, and they switch over, you know?
Yeah.
But Goldberg, look, he's coming along.
I think if you tune in again next week, Goldberg's facing Glacier, and I think you're going to see a different Goldberg there. So we'll leave it at that for now.
But during the course of the commercial breaks, we broke away to Las Vegas, Nevada at the MGM Grand. Mike Tenay standing by with Mean Gene Okerlund, the biggest contract signing in the history of our great sport. They finally got it done. Sting and Hogan, take a look.
Shut up! I'm talking with you, idiots! Shut up! It's like I said time and time again, he runs, he's a coward. My name's on this contract, his isn't, and he's late. One more time. Well, shut up, you idiots! The bottom line is, he's not gonna show. Now what do you want? Look at him, he's scared of Hollywood. I guess we don't need to.
Sell me that chicken.